Good morning. This is the third section of our summer series, reading of the wisdom books of the Tanakh. We started with Proverbs and saw how they took the gathered wisdom of various cultures, wisdom about how to live expeditiously, profitably. He gathered it together and seasoned it with sayings about how to find God's wisdom and live by God's way. Put it together in a synthesis for good living. And for 2 weeks, we looked at Job, which looks at the wisdom of Proverbs and the like, and says, well, yes, but doing all that certainly improves your chances of doing well. But it doesn't always quite work out that way. Sometimes the wicked seem to thrive. Sometimes the innocent have the roof fall in on them. Why? And after all his wrestling with that, Job gets a divine apparition, but no real answer. The question sort of remains. This week and next, we look at the book of Kohelet, also known as Ecclesiastes, depending on which translation you're reading, which comes still later in the sequence, not much more than a couple hundred years before Christ, although the author appears to be Solomon. Actually, it's couple hundred years before the turn of the century, before the turn of the age. And it's very much influenced by the Greek wisdom. It's starting to intermingle now with the traditional Jewish wisdom. And it reflects on the reflections on the reflections. And Kohelet sounds a bit cynical. Maybe he is. Emptiness. Futility. Futility, utter futility, the translation that we have, the JPS translation. The older translation that you're probably more familiar with, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. But that's not vanity in the sense of, oh, look at how handsome I am. But rather vanity in the sense of emptiness. Hevel is the Hebrew word. Like many words in Hebrew and Yiddish, it can be better explained by example than by definition. Hevel is what happens on a morning in October when you go outside and go, and you see your breath. And it seems quite solid and substantial, except you can put your hand right through it. And in about less than a minute, it's gone. That's hevel. That which appears to have substance, but doesn't quite really. Everything is hevel. Hevel, hevelim, using the way of making a superlative by putting a genitive with it. Emptiness of emptiness is very empty. Utter futility. Yeah. Is it all utter futility? Perhaps. And perhaps that's a way of reflecting on the reflection, getting wise about wisdom, knowing the limits of knowing. Read the book. You'll find it in the middle of the Megillot, the scrolls, at least in a good Jewish translation. In most Christian translations, it gets shifted around. They change the name to Ecclesiastes, put it towards the end in the wisdom books. By the way, wherever you find it, it's very readable. It's not like Job that goes on and sort of beats you to death with the idea. I don't think anybody's ever been able to read Job in one sitting. You can read Kohelet in one sitting, less than an hour. Even if you stop and reflect on it, stop and wrestle with it a little, less than an hour. Take some time and do it. See what it says to you. To me, it reminds me of two of the experiences of my long, relatively undistinguished academic career. When I sat for my exams for my SCM, we had two professors in a panel and then two others in a panel, 45 minutes each. One of the guys I had was John Cronin. John was one of the leaders of Catholic social thought, a leader for the Church on the Hill for a generation or so. And he starts off with, "Dick, would you trace for me the history of papal social teaching from Leo XIII to the present?" Now that sounds like an awful question. It spans almost 100 years. But for all of that, that's a wonderful question. Because it's so big, you can go anywhere you want with it. And anything you happen to remember, you can talk about at length. And all the stuff that you don't know, you can pass over in silence, you know. And I'm passing over a lot in silence. So he gets a little more precise and says, "Now, what did John the 23rd say about such and such a topic in Mater Magistra?" Now that's a little more precise. "Do the best I can with it." And then he says, "Now, what does that have to do with the dating of the encyclical?" "With the dating of the encyclical?" "Yeah." I sat there and thought for a good minute. Finally, I said, "Father, if that's what it takes to get a master's degree from this institution, I don't get one. I haven't the vaguest idea." The other guy took up a totally different question. When he came back in, he came from a different angle. We never got back to that point. Afterwards, I caught up with him. I said, "What does that have to do with the dating of the encyclical?" He said, "Well, John's advisors were divided over that point. He had to resolve it himself and held the whole thing up 6 weeks beyond what they had planned on doing." And from where was I supposed to know that? Same place I did. The gossip at the Vatican. "Did you plan that?" "No, that was just sheer spontaneous deviltry. But it's very much related to the main point." "And to what main point was that related?" He said, "Well, one of the principal objects of this whole system is to make sure that by the time you get out of here, you know that you don't know everything." Point taken. Many years later, I'm defending my doctoral dissertation. Now, objectively, this is not a problem. You look at it objectively, you know that by the time you get that far, they've got as much invested in it as you do. And while they will, you know, give you a good go-round, the chances of you actually failing this thing are very small. But subjectively, it doesn't feel that way. You're facing this 4 to 5 people who, with a stroke of a pen, can turn the last 8 years of your life into dust and ashes. And after 2 hours worth of going around, they excuse you and they deliberate. Probably takes them only about 5 minutes. But they wait at least 20. And then the junior most member of the committee is sent out to bring you back in. And you stand there. And they sit there. And they sit there. And they sit there some more. Stone face. They wait until they can see the blood beginning to mingle with your sweat rolling off your forehead and puddling around your toes. Finally, the chairman of the committee stands up and says, "Congratulations, doctor, you may be seated." And at that point, you're a PhD. And then he says, "I will now initiate you into the sacred mystery of academia. When you know everything that is worth knowing, and know that you know everything that is worth knowing. We give you the bachelor's degree. When you know that you do not know everything that is worth knowing, we give you a master's degree. And when you know that you really don't know a damn thing, and furthermore, neither do the rest of us, we give you the PhD. And there's some real truth in that, you know? By the time you finish that dissertation, or one teeny little sub area, you know as much as any human being on the face of the earth. And you know that for every answer you've got about 10 more questions. And slowly it begins to dawn on you that even the professors, even the real big, you know, names, they know 100 times more about 100 times as much. And therefore, they have 100 times more questions. None of us know it all. None of us know half as much as we thought we knew when we started. And perhaps that's what Qohelet is saying. There is no limit to wisdom. But because of that, there is no end either. You never know all of it. Our participation in God's wisdom is finite because we are finite. And if you think you're going to have it all together, you're wrong. You haven't started yet. By the time you get to the end, you realize how much more there is out there. And maybe that's why it all seems futility. Or like grabbing your breath on an October morning. It's not exhaustively, comprehensively done. Doesn't mean it's not worthwhile. Keep on striving. Keep on learning. Keep on wrestling with it. There is progress to be made. But that progress is limited. And by the time you get to the end, you realize how limited it is. Maybe that's what Qohelet is saying. I think. I wrestle with it too. Read it. Wrestle with it. It has something to say. Something that I think might be important. Something that's limited. We'll talk about the limitations a little bit next week when we put the series to as best it will come to a conclusion. Because it's limited, it has its own limits, its own breakthrough ability. You need to put it together and then you need to take it apart again. But first you need to read it. Need to wrestle with it. What is it saying to you? Part of it is about that futility. Part of it is about that cynicism, the self-limitation of wisdom. But part of that opens out to a It opens out to the idea that there is a contentment in this finitude if you accept it. If you go striving after complete wisdom, you drive yourself crazy because it's not to be had. But if you accept the wisdom that you're capable of, there is contentment in that. If you accept life as it comes, there's a certain acceptance to that. Has God given you a companion to share your life? Rejoice in it. Has God given you a chance to earn enough for some bread and wine for tonight's dinner? Rejoice in it. Don't expect the ultimate answers, because the ultimate answers are not at hand. But be content with less ultimate answers. Bread and wine for dinner, someone to share it with. Rejoice in that. For this is perhaps the human lot. To strive, constantly to strive, to make some progress, but not to find it all out, not to reach the ultimate end, but to be content with what we have achieved, to be content with the journey. Maybe. Maybe that's what he's saying. Maybe. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.